to order, and we'll open the work session on House Bill 3240. And Janet, could you give us a brief rundown of where we're at with it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3240 was the bill that added a $10 assessment on traffic offense convictions and specified how the money would be distributed for traffic safety education. 20% of the money to a safety education fund and the remaining 80% to the local government body if the citation was from a local law enforcement officer, and to the Oregon Traffic Safety Education Fund if the citation was by a state law enforcement officer. You have at your place this morning the -3 amendments. The amendments allow cities or counties to, in effect, opt out and to not allow their municipal or justice courts to assess the additional $10. And then it goes on to provide that when a citation is issued by an officer of a city or county that opts out of the new assessment, it requires a circuit court imposing the assessment to deposit all of the assessment into the state safety education fund. It specifies that a city or county must collaborate with the public, with law enforcement agencies, and traffic safety organizations in allocating the funds that they receive under the measure. And one other thing, it renames the new fund. In the original bill, it was the Oregon Traffic Safety Education Fund, which is similar to the other fund, existing fund mentioned used in the bill. So the new fund will now be called, if the -3 amendments are adopted, the Traffic Safety Assessment Fund. That's the changes that are in the -3 amendments, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone here to testify on the -3? Okay. Whichever one wants to come up, please do.
Or both.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Susan Schneider, City of Portland Government Relations. Just to say that your committee staff gave an excellent summary of the -3s. We would support these amendments to the bill and urge you to move the bill on to Ways and Means. We understand we had understood from the committee administrator that there was to be a substantial fiscal coming for this, somewhere in the nature of $100,000. And I went down to fiscal last week to get it, and it was not available. So I don't know if that's, Brad can probably tell you whether or not that's the number or not, but our intention was to discuss with the Ways and Means Committee that if whatever that number turns out to be, that would be something that would come out of the proceeds of the fine, and that we can discuss in some detail with them what it might actually be, and then how that mechanism would work. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Brad?
Chair Brown, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brad Swank. I'm Special Counsel for Government Relations for the Oregon State Court Administrator's Office. I appear here today in opposition to the bill and in opposition to the -3 amendments, and I can explain why. We're also happy to argue, to address this down in Ways and Means if you would like. Let me explain that we're not in opposition to the theory of more money going to traffic safety and traffic enforcement. That's not the problem that we've got. When I started, sort of like telling a story, when I started with the courts in 1987, after having worked for the legislature for about 11 years, we had a system of special assessments that were applied to fines in courts, and there are about 15 or 18 of them. And every session, when I first started, there were actually only about 10, but this became a popular way to fund special programs, and after every session, somebody would come in and ask for a new special assessment. And at the end of session, we would change all of our accounting to add a new assessment, work on our computer programs, educate our people. It would take about 9 to 12 months to implement, so you'd only pick up a little revenue. And then we had all this accounting out there with all of these, this assessment going here and that assessment going there, and you've got an assessment, or we had an assessment for DAs, had several assessments, assessments for police. We had a number of assessments for everybody, and nobody was sure how much revenue it was supposed to generate or who was getting what. It was a big hassle. So we created some. We worked with the legislature to create something called the unitary assessment, where all of these assessments were brought in to a single assessment, and we just took that money and dumped whatever money we made from the criminal fines and costs and those things that we imposed or that cities and counties imposed, and we put it into one pot. It was called the Criminal Fines and Assessments Count. Made accounting very simple, made the process very simple, let us focus on things other than complicated accounting, like collections. So we got to spend more time trying to go out and collect the money that we'd imposed because we weren't spending so much time accounting for it. Now, that system, the unitary assessment, finally took effect fully in 1995, and it's worked fairly well since then. We've been able to predict revenues for the legislature, and the way the system has worked is that people have added money when they want money for a program, revenues for a program. They add money at the beginning of the revenue stream, and then at the end, the legislature says, well, generally they say, if you add $2, we'll let you have $1.50, and we'll use the other 50 cents for other programs that we're interested in. Now, the legislature's changed who gets those monies from time to time. It's been a ways and means decision, and they've generally worked with the substantive committees on those, too. So we've got a system that we set up that takes no money to change. If you want somebody new in the system, there are three ways that you can increase the revenues into the system that cost nothing, that are easy and quick to implement, that are implemented statewide without any additional training, without any additional costs. You can increase the unitary assessment, which means that you increase the amount of monies that goes to the state from all courts, municipal, justice, and circuit. You can increase the overall maximum fine for violations, which increases actually not only the money that goes to the state, but it increases the money that goes to local governments, too, because they get a split of that, particularly traffic. Or if you don't want to increase the amount, those amounts, you can increase the amount, what's called the base fine. That's a percentage of the maximum fine that the officer writes on the ticket, and it's what most people send into court so they can get this out of their violations, out of their hair, and walk away. As a policy matter, this system has worked well. The revenue's been predictable. We've been able to focus on collections. We can implement quickly at no cost to the legislature. Now, I know when I see bills like 3240 and I see bills like this, I have every session for the last 15 years since we've been working on it. The argument is, well, if we can give you the money to change the system, why would you not just change the system? And the policy is that you end up spending money changing the system after every legislative session and spending money on that as opposed to spending money on collections. Just dump more money into changing the system. We've got a system that works well, that costs nothing, that if you add money at the beginning of the system, the legislature can appropriate at the end. So as a policy matter, we're suggesting that maybe 3240 as written is not the way you want to go. You see from the -3 amendments, they are exempting municipal and justice courts. They're exempting municipal and justice courts because I suspect they've heard from some of the municipal and justice courts that this is going to be difficult and costly for us to implement. You know, if you stick with the system you've got, a system that's proven, that's in place, costs you nothing, you can still generate monies for these worthy programs without costing yourself any unnecessary expenses up front and without having to exempt people. So that's our argument to us. I mean, we're willing to make it down in ways and means. We're willing to deal with actual costs. I've been told by my programmers that this kind of reprogramming in the bill as written can run $50,000 to $100,000 for each additional assessment. But as importantly, you're going back to a system that a bunch of us, not anybody particular in this group, but we work very hard with the legislature, and Ms. Adkins was here when that happened. We worked hard with the legislature to put together a system that worked well, that has worked well, and I see us going back, setting a precedent to go back to a system that did not work well and was hard and expensive to administer and to change and to track and to make sure that people got the money. So, as I started out saying, we have no problem. Traffic safety, traffic enforcement are very important things. I think you can get there without going this route, which is returning to a system that didn't work very well. And I can answer any questions that you've got.
Any questions? Representative Greenham.
How much is in the unitary assessment now?
Well, Chair Brown, Representative Greenlick, statewide, last session, it's not just the unitary assessment, because you understand the fine monies and everything go into the criminal fines and assessments account, too. It was around...
I thought you said the model was there's now a unitary assessment in addition to the fines for a variety of things. And my question is, how much is it and what's it being used for now?
Chair Brown, Representative Greenlick, the unitary assessment pulled all these assessments together into an addition to a single assessment. But in addition to that, all the state's portion of the fine, which means, and it's a relatively complicated, it seems like a complicated system, but it works relatively fairly smoothly. There are three different parts to monies that go to the criminal fines assessments account. One of them is the unitary assessment, which is the single assessment. They also get the criminal fines and assessments account also gets all of the money that's the state's portion of the fine that's imposed, because if an officer cites into a court, for instance, if a city officer cites into a circuit court, which is a state court, the fine amount is divided 50%. So the state's portion goes into the criminal fines and assessments account, and the officer's portion stays with the city, to the city treasury. And any costs that are ordered in state courts go to the criminal fines and assessments account, too.
I seem to be having trouble communicating. It's something that I occasionally have. So let me see if I can be more simple. Your argument is that when these things come up, the new model is there's a unitary assessment. So if you want to put something into a unitary assessment, you add it to the unitary assessment. My question is, and I'll see if I can make this very, very clear, how much is the current unitary assessment?
Oh, okay.
And what is it being used for now? So the answer is, if we were going to add $10 to that, I want to know what we'd be adding $10 to and what it's being used for currently.
Chair Brown, Representative Greenland, the unitary assessment varies depending on the offense, but for most for violations level offenses, it's $35. And we estimate that if you add on a cost, it's higher for misdemeanors, it's higher for felonies, it's higher, it's charged on all offenses. We estimate that an across the board $1 increase generates about $500,000 a bid biennium for the criminal fines and assessments account, which is at the end of the revenues, which is where all the money revenue goes into. But there are other revenues that go into that account. That account is currently used for a certain amount of it goes to the, I don't know the exact percentage, a certain amount goes to the state general fund. A certain amount, it's currently the only funding source, I believe, for the police academy and for police training. There is some money that goes to the small county health assistance, and there's some money for some other things. I'm not exactly sure what all the money goes, but the legislature has the ability to change that every session just by passing a bill or by making an appropriation from that account. And I know it will be under review this session, because we've already been asked to do estimates on changes. Does that help?
That does. Thank you.
Representative Mabry.
In your testimony, you suggested you had no problem with the theory. It's just getting it there that's the problem. How would you fix it?
Chair Brown, Representative Mabry. If you would like to increase funding for these programs, and I'm looking at what they are, traffic safety education, traffic safety improvements, and traffic law enforcement, you could simply increase the unitary assessment by however much you were trying to generate. That's one way of doing it. That money ends up at the back, and then at the back end, Ways and Means makes an appropriation. Another thing you could do, as I suggested, is increase the maximum fine amount for violations. We were estimating that a 10% increase, because of the way the system is set up, a 10% increase in the maximum fine for violations ends up generating about $2 million for the state a biennium, and about it's $2.3 million for local governments. And then what you do is at the end of the stream, you take part of that money to use it for the programs. But it also puts you on the basis of, rather than just generating money and saying, go forth and do good, of having a program come in and say, how much money do you need, and making a specific appropriation, and see what they do with that, using other money for other things. It's a way of accounting for and controlling expenditures that the legislature's used for a long time. Those are both ways that you put more money into the system, take it out at the back end without affecting anybody else, and I might add, without any additional cost, because that's the system is designed to make those kinds of changes relatively quickly with no particular additional training, and that's, we thought it was slick when we set it up. But
Follow up. But if we were to take your first option of increasing the unitary assessment as a possibility, do I understand correctly that the $10 would go into that big pot, and then the pot would be distributed so the entire $10 wouldn't go to where it was aimed for? Is that correct?
Chair Brown, Representative Mabry, the legislature is in entire control of where that money goes. Traditionally, with the unitary assessment, what has happened is that we're able to project from a particular increase in the unitary assessment. For instance, let's say that you're going to increase the unitary assessment by $2 across the board. That's roughly $1 million increase into just the criminal fines and assessments account, okay, over the course of the next biennium. The legislature, what has traditionally happened is that they've tried to figure out how many new programs they want to fund, mm-hmm. and then they increase the unitary assessment enough to fund those programs, and that holds everybody else in the system harmless because you've added new monies into the system, and those new monies are spent to fund those new programs. Now, not everybody is always thrilled with the way the legislature decides to appropriate money, but that's traditionally the way that it's worked. It works the same way with an increase in the maximum fine amount, because the money goes to the same place, and if you can project how much, and we've been fairly accurate at projecting how much additional revenue is created, then you can appropriate it and control your expenditures.
So that control is adjusted by a percentage that the legislature allocates to a particular.
That's correct.
Thank you.
I know that like you said, Brad, there is a number of programs that are funded through that unitary assessment, and I think during the rebalancing processes that we went through during the special session, some of that money was bled away for other needs. I know that I had some want for some money for children's advocacy centers last time, and that came from the unitary assessment fund. So. Any other questions? Representative
Thank Connors. You, Mr. Chair. In this bill, we were also trying to get at the violations of the moving violations, because that was a safety factor. And that's why they wanted to assess that $10 specifically to that violation. Could we still assess more fines for moving violation and get it into your system and make it work so the people could get the money they want to try to get?
Chair Brown, Representative Zahner, it is more problematic. We tend to do things as we can in the easiest and least expensive way. It is more problematic to single out specific kinds of offenses. It is, in fact, something that could be done if you want to increase the legislature's done it, a number of times. If you want to increase the base fine, the amount the officer writes on the ticket, which in most instances increases the amount the person pays, you can actually put in the statute in Chapter 153, a provision that increases the base fine for certain kinds of offenses. And what that means is that when we send out our base fine schedule, which goes to all of the jurisdictions and all of the courts and all of the police, we indicate where there's an additional amount tagged onto certain kinds of offenses. That has happened for highway traffic safety zones, as you probably know. It's happened for school zones where additional amounts have been put on. It's happened for, I'm trying to remember the other one. There's another one.
Work zones?
Work zones, yeah. And so there are certain things where, in fact, yes, the amount that the officer writes on the ticket and the amount that they generally pay is increased. And the legislature's done that over the years, and that's reasonably easy to accommodate.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Apparently, Susan and Scott have some comments, too. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Susan Schneider, City of Portland. We did actually look at each of the devices that Brad, each of the mechanisms that are currently available that Brad discussed. One of the big problems that we have is that even though this was an effort at reform, low those many years ago with unitary assessment and all that, collection system's still broken, and that's a big concern. We also have some judges who are unwilling, no matter what the fine amount is, to really be consistently clear about traffic safety being a problem and finding people appropriately to respond to that. We were very interested as a matter of policy of connecting the violator to the program, and so that's why we're looking at something that's tailored. Now, I understand working in a large bureaucracy that when you make changes and they're not easy to implement, that that's difficult. But I think that the legislature has the both the ability and sometimes from time to time the desire to do something differently, and that's what we're asking you to do here. The unitary assessment is a whole nother thing. That's a very difficult issue. It's, as the chair observed, it's had its ups and downs and a lot of intrigue over the particularly the last year or so. And it is an area that's getting a lot of review this time, I understand, in the Ways and Means process. And this bill, if you choose to move it along, will go into the same subcommittee that will be looking at that whole issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Scott, did you have some?
Yeah, Scott Bricker with the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. I'm also a member of the Oregon Transportation Safety Coalition, which is the group that requested this bill. Just a couple notes as well, working on what Representative Chair Brown had mentioned about the unitary assessment and the pots of money changing or where the money is allocated to changing. There's two groups in our coalition, the Trauma Nurses Talk Tough out of Emanuel Hospital and Think First out of Oregon State, Oregon Health Sciences University, that both had received monies through the unitary assessment process a number of years ago. They provide very important services around the state, transportation safety, and a number of different levels. And throughout the sessions, their monies have dwindled and been all intensively removed. And so what we were looking for was a pot of money that would be a dedicated pot of money that would go, that would provide a nexus of the, you know, moving violations and the safety that's, the safety concerns that those are caused, and we've heard fairly broad support for transportation safety and the allocation of funds to the programs that help reduce traffic fatalities, that help deal with children bicycling and walking, child safety seats, seatbelt courses, and the like. So we're concerned, and I think we can, it sounds like this will be a larger discussion item again at the Public Safety Subcommittee, the Ways and Means Committee, but we're concerned about right now going that direction of the unitary assessment because of the fact that that money does tend to get pieced out as legislative sessions move down the line, and these programs currently don't have funding. So from our coalition, we're really supportive of having a dedicated pot that would go, you know, that would have specific places where it would go, and it would really meet the needs of the transportation safety community.
Thank you, Scott. And Representative Byer?
Yeah, thank you. Maybe for both of you, if we should send this down to Ways and Means, and they should choose to put this into the fund. Are you going to be happy with that, or just...
Well, I was just going to say, Chair Brown and Representative Byer, we're the City of Portland's just one member of the coalition. I think maybe Scott has a better, what you heard from Scott is a better.
Yeah, currently, Chair Brown, Representative Byer, the education fund that would be earmarked for programs of this nature, it is important to have a separate fund that's clearly stated for the purposes of transportation safety that would go towards effective programs. I think in looking at this bill, it was more of a what we've heard from other folks is that this was a good way to go, and our end interest is to have funding in those programs. So truthfully, I'd like to work with some other folks that know, you know, a little bit more about the system than we do.
Chair Brown, Representative Byer, we have modeled this after another program, and I might ask Mark Lear to what state?
Colorado.
Colorado, that uses a similar, this is where the model came from, and so that's what we're trying to achieve, it, and that has worked very well.
Thank you. Other questions?
Thank you.
Chair Brown, members of the committee,
yeah.
Again, Brad Swank. And we don't have any problem with them setting up a separate fund. And the issue is where the money comes out of the revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
If it comes out at the beginning, it generates a lot of work. If it comes out at the end, they could designate monies at the end to a specific fund that come out of this revenue stream. They're also... Interestingly enough, we've been collections was something that's meant. We've actually been able to spend more time and improve our collections on these things. And there are always two things that people mentioned that intrigued me. One of them was that judges aren't imposing fines on specific things, and the other was that they like to tie the fine to the purpose. And two of the things that we've discovered since we've been able to spend more time dealing with collections is one. Very few of the fines are actually imposed by judges. The vast majority of them, 90%, an officer writes a base fine on a ticket. That person goes into the court, talks to a court clerk, who has a preset schedule there, calls the court clerk and says, how much am I going to have to pay on this? Because I've got this perfect driving record. And so the clerk looks it up and they find out. So in the vast majority of the instances, no judge is involved. The other thing we've discovered is that most of the money comes from speeding offenses because it's the most commonly cited offense. And Class B speeding offenses, level speeding offenses primarily. So mostly it's the speeders who are paying for everything else, regardless of, you know, there are a lot of other offenses, but it's the speeders who get caught, who get ticketed, and from whom you make the most money. So I just thought I would add those thoughts for your consideration.
Chair Brown, for the record, my name is Mark Lear, City of Portland Office of Transportation. I just wanted to make a couple of quick points. We did model this assessment off of an assessment that's working very well in the state of Colorado. The some of the benefits of the way they've set this up with a special assessment is that there's a real clear accountability for the revenue that's generated by these fines going to traffic safety services. That's one thing that's real important. Another factor is that the programs are able to be set up where there's some real certainty that the revenue is going to be there, and they've been very effective in talking about these programs, getting the community to help design those programs. And I think just a third issue would be the issue that Representative Zahner raised about whether or not there'll be some administrative costs of collecting this fee, which really we're trying to make it really clear that it's on the moving violation and not all other violations, would be, I think, a great question for the Ways and Means Committee to decide. I mean, there's still a question of what's going to be more administratively costly, adding this fee or making a change to the unitary assessment just to cover that piece. Thanks.
Representative Mabry.
Question about the fines themselves. My understanding is that, because I've never had a ticket. You believe that, don't you? Anyway. Oh, I see. We can't be lying here. But the way, if I get a speeding ticket that has a posted bail of $100, and I have a perfect driving record, and so I go in and say, you know, plead insanity, and they reduce it. It's like that ticket was originally $100 plus the $35 assessment fee, or that $35 part of that. And the second part of my question is, if they reduce my ticket to $50 instead of $100, then does it become a $85 ticket because of the $35 unitary assessment? How does that work?
Chair Brown, Representative Mabry. Actually, there's a maximum fine for speeding in the statutes, and speeding, it varies depending upon how fast you're going. But if it's an A, B, C, or D offense, there's a maximum fine for that. And in statute, there's a statutory formula for figuring out what's called the base fine amount. Okay, the base fine amount is the amount the officer writes on the ticket. And in general, the statutory formula for what the officer writes on the ticket is 40% of the maximum fine plus the assessments, and that's the unitary assessment, and there's a county assessment, too, that the counties still get to keep, one we weren't able to eliminate, that get added on, but it's appropriate to the 40% as appropriate to the 100% because the county is a sliding scale. So it's $35 plus the 40% of the whatever, and the county assessment, and that's totaled up as a single amount that gets written on the front of the ticket. Okay? And that's uniform statewide because the legislature decided in 1993 that it didn't make sense for officers to be writing speeding tickets in Baker that had different amounts than for the same offense in Multnomah County or Salem or whatever. So there's a uniform minimum base fine schedule now that the State Court Administrator's Office puts back. Now, in 1999, the legislature discovered that when the amounts were being reduced, you know, well, we're not going to give you the $100, and most of the time it's reduced for your driving record. And the amount by which it's reduced is completely at the discretion of the local court. And for most of them, what they do is the presiding judge puts out a Violations Bureau schedule that reduces it so much if it's the first offense and so much if it's the second offense, and that's what the clerks follow when they reduce. And in 1999, Ways and Means discovered that when that was being reduced, the first thing that was being reduced was the unitary assessment, which was the state's portion. And in 1999, the legislature was having some trouble with, even then, with revenues, and they were trying to stabilize revenue streams. And so they put a provision in the statute that says essentially the first portion or the last portion that you excuse, as long as you impose a fine, is the unitary assessment. So what we tell our courts is the first $35 for speeding is unitary assessment. And anything over that you impose gets split the way that normal fines split. So in your example, if the amount written were $100 to start with and they reduced it to 70, then 35 would be sent to the state as unitary assessment, and the other 35 would be split between the county assessment and the jurisdiction of the citing officer and the jurisdiction of the court that it was cited into.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Byer.
I have a question regarding the Colorado program and their special assessment. Do they have a unitary assessment program, or do
Chair Brown, I don't know whether they have a unitary assessment piece or not. The information that I read, and it was in a U.S. mayor's, where I got the information to start with, a conference of U.S. mayors, or something like that, so the League of Cities had done a white paper on best practices, and they'd identified this as a unique way that a state had identified a way of solving a traffic safety problem as something that they added to their current fine structure. So I'm unaware of whether they have that.
Chairman, Representative Beyer, if I can. Oregon was the first to come up with the unitary assessment scheme, and over the years we have been contacted by other states. I am currently in discussions with Washington and Alaska, who have contacted me for information about, and I've talked to Arizona, and I'm trying to think of states over the years who have contacted me, because the assessment idea as a whole has caught on, and other states are trying to find ways to get out of the spiral of adding new special assessments each session that they have to put onto. But Oregon was the first to come up with this scheme, and it's I think starting to spread.
Thank you.
I just had one follow up for Chair Brown to Representative Brown. I think the one thing that's really been unique about at least the Colorado program, what we were hoping to mimic with our program, was when you ask people about the unitary assessment. It's even hard for people that run the program. It's hard sometimes to say, here's where all the pieces go. And someone who goes out to a lot of public meetings and talks about how the fine structure is critical, not only to deterring violations, but also that it's not a cash cow for general fund resources, but it's really tied into the traffic safety work that we do. That's going to be a hard thing for me to do, like it is for a program manager when it's so complicated, to go out to the public and say, we added this, here's specifically where it's going, these are the kind of services that are being provided. So I understand that we want to make sure that we look at those administrative costs, but that there is some benefit if we can really make it clear to the public that this is for a specific service.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it. Okay. I think it's obvious that the debate is appropriate and necessary, and I feel that we should refer it to Ways and Means so that it can be have its hearing down there and dealt with accordingly. So I would entertain a motion to adopt the Dash 3s.
I move we adopt Dash 3 amendments 3240, sir.
Representative Greenlick moves the adoption of the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3240.
That's it.
Is there any discussion?
Mr.
Representative
Chair,
Gilman.
More not on the amendments, but on the whole idea. I'm very supportive of traffic education and safety education. I don't think we've gotten to the right mechanism. I will be a courtesy vote, but in my heart, I don't like it.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion? Ryan, can you call the roll? Dispatch, there you go.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Beyer.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Greenlight.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. The Dash 3s are adopted. Take another motion.
I would move we pass 3240 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due-pass recommendation.
Representative Greenlick moves House Bill 3240 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Beyer.
Mr. Chair, I agree. This is a very important program, traffic safety, and I definitely support the concept. A few issues have been raised, and I think we need to move it on and continue the discussion.
Thank you, Representative. Any other discussion?
I'd just like to point out that it may just be good lobbying, but I received more email on 3240 from my constituents than on almost anything that we've heard so far. And that leads me to believe either the bike lobby knows how to mobilize their constituents, but I recognize there are some really significant problems, but it seems Ways and Means is the place to sort them out.
Thank you, Representative. Ryan, can you call the roll, please?
Representative Beyer.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Greenlight.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Are you ready, Cliff?
Sure.
We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 3135. Representative Zahner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bicycle licensing bill came to be for me because I ride a bicycle and I'm out around St. Paul and all those areas, and all of the trash on the highway seems to end up on the bike paths. So that was my first problem. I'm thinking, you know, if we could generate some money, maybe we could hire some people to go out with little sweepers and sweep the bike paths, and I'd be happy to participate in that. And then checking it out with some states like Minnesota, Hawaii. Hawaii particularly uses it to help their police department find the bicycles that are lost and stolen. They have an identification program. So that added a little more to it. And then the safety helmets, education, the things we've talked about here. And so that's... I was just trying a system to generate more revenue to help the Bicycle Alliance do some of those projects. And to, I thought, if I'm a bike rider and I want bike paths that are clean, I ought to help pay for it. And that's how it started. And we have some other bills, that, some assessment and that may work to do solve the same thing I'm trying to do. So that ends my testimony.
Thank you, Representative. Scott?
And thanks. Scott Bricker with the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. Thanks for letting me come and speak to the committee. Bicycle Transportation Alliance, we work on a lot of different issues. Generally, we represent bicyclists and the interests of the bicycle industry, transportation safety, lots of other issues. So obviously this bill has interest to us. Currently, just what I'd like to do is just update the committee on where we're at in trying to work on fees or other types of systems in this legislative session that would be imposed on bicycles, the sale of bicycles, registration, and the like. I've been working with Representative Zahner and his staff on talking about the registration bill, and at the same time, there's another part of a bill, of the transportation package bill, that would that I truthfully haven't really seen with my own eyes, but have talked to a bunch of folks about it, that would assess a fee on the sale of new bicycles, a user fee type of a thing. So right now, to my knowledge, is basically two bills that both have some type of either assessment or new program on bicycles. The last Friday, I met with Senator Bruce Starr in his Portland office to talk about this fee, and I think talked to a couple of folks in this committee about it, but mostly with him, because he had approached me about a month and a half ago about the fee. And just last week as well, we had a marathon meeting with our legislative committee at the BTA to talk about what would be good ways to assess fees in the sale of bikes or on bicycle users. The BTA generally feels that we're willing to play ball, at least in discussing the fee and sale of new bikes. We understand we're interested in having more bicycle facilities. We're interested in having clean bicycle facilities and education programs that would educate safety and also promote bicycling in the state of Oregon for economic reasons, health reasons, environmental reasons, and the like. What we think right now, the best way to go forward is to try and work on the transportation package bill, you know, large bill with my assumption is a lot of momentum. And as part of that bill, currently what's in the bill, what I understand, is a 3% fee in the sale of new bikes. We're looking at some sort of minimum and maximum, figure out the best administrative ways to work on it. I know that Senator Starr is planning on meeting with other folks, some of the lobbyists from some of the big box retail stores. In fact, the big box retail stores sell about 75% of the bikes in Oregon, and meet with them to see if this would work administratively for them. We're going to try and bring some, we've been talking to bike shops, we're going to try and bring some the bigger bike shops to the table, maybe to have a joint meeting and talk about how this could be worked, how this could be done administratively. So what we'd like to do is to work through that avenue, because there's, I think we feel like there's a lot of work going on already, and see if it works that way and not have two different things going on. So what our recommendation is, would be to not move on this bill and allow members of the Transportation Committee to work on this issue through the transportation package. And I'll take questions if people
Scott, do you have any idea how many bicycles there are in the state of Oregon?
Well, not how many there are. I should know that, but there's probably a lot. There's probably a lot in the basement of everyone's house. Need to be dusted off. There's about 225,000 sold a year. Of that, about 175,000 are sold in the big box and other shops, G.I. Joe's, Copeland's, those as well as the Walmarts and the Fred Meyers and Targets. And then about 50,000 are sold in the independent, the small bike shops, you know, Joe's bike shop type of a thing. Interestingly, the 50,000 sold at the small shops gross more than the 175,000 sold at the other shops, because bicycles go from at the small shops start at about 250 and they go up to about $5,000. Usually, the average sales price is about 275 to 300 in a small bike shop. So we're looking at a fee that we're interested. In the equity issue, we understand that families want to be able to buy their children maybe inexpensive bikes, and they'll graduate to more expensive bikes as they grow older and they're not growing as fast. And that there would be, we wouldn't want to assess a $30 fee on an $85 bike or even a $20 fee, but we're looking at what are the minimums and maximums that could be placed on the sale of bikes. So as an estimate, we estimate, using some of the various structures, this could generate anywhere between $1 to $2 million a year before administrative costs.
Sure.
Representative Dingover.
Yeah, I'd like to follow up on that, because that was the question when I was reading through this. I was trying to figure out, from doing the math, about how much does it actually generate after administration, because this would entail setting up a whole new administrative process.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Chair Brown, Representative Dingfelder, that's an issue that I don't think we have any grasp of. We don't have any experience with assessing this type of sales tax type of new fee, what it would be. We've heard from the bike shops, they're not particularly happy with this. I think a lot of it is administrative. We're concerned that every time they fill out that paperwork, they're gonna not like us. There's talk about providing some compensation for the bike shops for their time and administrative, and I think research needs to be done to see if it's feasible. We're not going to support the concept if 50, 60, 70% of it gets eaten up in administrative costs. It doesn't seem to make sense to assess a fee if it's going to go to administrative costs. So I hope this is something we really address over the next month or however, what the timeline is.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative
Zahner. To answer Representative Dingfelder, my intent was to say if we charged 15 bikes at the bike shop to let the bike shops have $5 or whatever, just like we do when we do a parking permit when we go skiing or a fishing license. Let them make sure they can make some money for administering it. The other part on the other bikes that weren't new would be run through service clubs. We'd have weekends where the people could take their bikes to Kmart, and the Kiwanis clubs could issue the licenses and operate that and get some money for the service clubs. I'm very active in the Kiwanis club. That was my initial intent. I didn't never want a DMV to try to handle licensing of a bicycle. And then in there's lots of other stuff that they wrote in legislative council that would never be applicable. Transferring of how many times you sell your bicycle and all that other stuff. There's a lot of stuff in there that I wouldn't even try to run this thing. Yeah. But I wanted to start the conversation, and the Bicycle Alliance folks are happy to participate. It's a user fee type thing to increase more bike paths and more other things. So that's a start.
Thank you, Representative Byer.
Teach me not to watch too close. Is there any kind of enforcement for not registry?
Well, Hawaii has one.
But this bill?
Well, about if your bikes were licensed and then they weren't licensed.
There's $25 fee.
Well, yeah, I didn't. Okay. I never did. Hawaii just picked them up, and then if they weren't licensed, then you came and got it, and you paid a fine. They kept it simple. If you didn't have the license on them, they picked them up. Because then you'd have an enforcement problem. If you write a ticket, then the people don't pay, so they just pick up the bike.
Any other questions? Thank you, Scott.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3135 and let it ride off out into the sunset.
Yeah. Well, we got time. We work on it next session, but gives us something to do.
The let's see, we're waiting on Krupp to get here. I'm going to.
Will we be having a transportation? Did you have some estimated dates?
I've had several, and we keep it's a moving target.
Is that what we yeah. need to do this week, though?
No, I don't think there'll be any difficulty getting permission to run, yeah, or to have hearings on it. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2578, and that is the citizenship requirements for driver's license. My intent is to move that to the Judiciary Committee, that they have several other issues that they may or may not be addressing, and we would have these issues all in the same committee where it would be appropriately handled, I believe.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Make a motion we move House Bill 2578 to the Judiciary Committee.
Without recommendation.
Is that how you do it?
Yeah, without recommendation.
That's fine.
Okay.
Without recommendation.
That's right.
Let's get it out of here.
Representative's Honor moves House Bill 2578 to the Judiciary Committee without recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. Okay, and so I guess we'll stand at ease here for a minute or two, waiting on Representative Krupp.
Except Dingfeller doesn't have to stand.
Committee till 9:45.
Oh, okay.
That's the way you.
To order, and we'll open a public hearing on our end work session on House Bill 2670. Janet, can you give us a detailed explanation of the day for us?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. House Bill 2670, and you've all had now half an hour to look at it with all this extra time.
Oh, there it is.
I spent my time well.
I didn't think we had it yet.
We passed out today the -4 amendments. There was only a couple of timeline changes from the -3 amendments, but we're now looking at the -4 amendments. This is the bill that would set up dealership agreement or allow dealership agreements, require dealership agreements between RV dealers and RV manufacturers and distributors, and would not allow dealers to have to sell RVs without dealership agreements. There's a number of details that are written in the background on the staff, or excuse me, in the what the measure does and the staff measure summary. A couple of changes from the original bill. They're not calling these franchise agreements. They're calling them dealership agreements now. And I asked Legislative Council if there was any legal difference between the two, and there's not. So it's like a franchise agreement, what anyone else would call a franchise agreement. This does not bring any kind of government in terms of a state agency oversight over these agreements. So if they have a complaint about something in the dealership agreement or something not going right, it doesn't bring DMV in, it doesn't bring DCBS in. They would have to settle things through a court action or bringing a civil complaint. And there is at the end of one of the things the presenter proponents talked about at the hearing on the bill was at the end of section 15, and it's on page 14 of the bill.
14 of the
dash four amendments. At the last two lines at the end of section 15, this is what grandfathers in Marathon Coach outside of Eugene in the ability to sell vehicles right from their plants.
Okay.
Otherwise, a manufacturer cannot own or control a dealership under the under the state, which would become state law in the bill. There's some detail in the bill, and a lot of the other detail would be left to the agreements that were worked out between the dealers and manufacturers. And there's representatives from the dealers and manufacturers here today to talk about the amendments.
Janet, do you know the extent to which this is the same or different than the kinds of dealership agreements that new car dealers have with manufacturers? Is it modeled after that?
Mr. Chair, I think the proponents might be able to answer that, because that was my first question, is why don't they just not exempt them from motor vehicle dealership agreements? I think it's a lot of the warranty situation is so different because of the different kinds of things that are in an RV.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Sean, John, please.
Sean, John.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller, I represent the Oregon Recreational Vehicle Dealers Association, and Janet did a good job of describing the differences between the Dash 3 amendments and the bill, and we made one other small change in the Dash 4 amendments, which you see before you, that was not put in the bill in Section 15, dealing with the company store issue. That's the ability of the manufacturer to be able to sell right out of their plant and not have a dealership network. I will tell you that I know from a national level and from our recreational vehicle dealer manufacturers, they have no intent of selling out of their plant because they have dealership networks, and those are the folks that I represent. However, in certain circumstances, such as Marathon, which is a very high end, they don't have a dealership network. We wanted to make sure we grandfathered that in, and that is in that is also in the Dash 4 amendments. Mr. Chair, to answer Representative Greenlick's question on the how this differs from the automobile franchise law, it differs in quite a bit, because we originally looked at the auto franchise law and see if we can incorporate this into that specific statute. And when we started working through the issues of the differences between RVs compared to cars, it didn't work, and so we had to actually create our own statute. The biggest difference, Janet did reference, was the warranty work.
Is it conceptually the same kind of model?
Oh, yeah.
I was just trying to know what the problem is to which this...
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, absolutely. Conceptually, we're doing the same thing. So we're establishing a guideline and statute that defines the relationship between the manufacturer and the dealer. For instance, in one of the big provisions in the bill, they don't require in statute to have a signed agreement, dealer agreement. This particular statute says that relationship, you are going to sign an agreement. And so, again, from a dealer's perspective, to build value in your business where there is no agreement and can be changed or eliminated at any whim, there really is no value in a dealership. And so this just establishes the framework. But to answer in simple terms, absolutely, it gets to the same point.
Any other questions? John?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Brenneman. I represent Recreational Vehicle Industry Association based in Reston, Virginia. That's RVIA. I've been with them several sessions, going back now a few years. It was two sessions ago that the automobile dealers wrote their dealer's rights bill, and at that time my association asked me to seek an exemption. At that point, with the understanding with the dealers that would come back last session, actually, and complete this bill, it just didn't get done. And so we were committed to do the same kind of concept that the auto dealers did. Both 3 and 4 still have some wordsmithing to do, but in essence we have contained in here what our two associations have agreed to in concept, and we want to make sure that we can clear up the language on the marathon exemption so it's correct, and would like to do it, though, with the bill over on the Senate side, if it could be passed out today and through the floor. It gives us a little more time to work on it. My lawyers back east went home at 2 o'clock Pacific on Friday, so they didn't get a chance to see it then, and they just picked it up early this morning and have spent a few hours going through it. They picked up a few areas that just need a little tweaking, but we'd like to get it going if we could.
Any questions? Representative Iyer.
So, help me. Does this not exactly do, this section not do what you thought it might with Marathon?
Mr. Chair, Representative Iyer, if you look at Section 15 of the bill, lines 18, of the Dash 4 amendments, line 18 to 19,
mm-hmm.
The section deals with company stores, so the manufacturer. You go down, that lands 18, 19, so the grantor owned operator controlling the dealership on January 1, 2003. These are exemptions from these statutes. They are a grantor because they make it owned operator controlling the dealership, and so that means meaning that they are selling also. And so what John has referenced is, We're going to make sure that takes care of their case. I believe it does, but when I brought the issue to legislative council, they wrote it to specifically take care of the problem.
Okay.
But just so you're comfortable, we want to make sure before it gets all the way through the process. But it is our intent that is in there to protect their interests.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Janet.
I just want to point out on that. That the way that's written, that grandfathers them in, and according to the two of you, there aren't any other instances where that's occurring now in Oregon. And also, Mr. Chair, it would not allow future setups like Marathon Coach has right now, because it only grandfathers them in if they were in existence. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry.
Representative Byer.
So, thank you. In that case, should they exchange hands, the exemption goes away, or the grandfather goes away, or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Byer, no, it's the company. They've been in existence for a number of years. It's not our intent to put them out of business if it changes hands.
Okay.
John.
Mr. Chair, John Brenham again for the record, and Representative Byer. The concern my lawyers had was that dealership covers their instance. They're the only one in Oregon that's been selling directly out of the plant, and they thought the fact that it said dealership and not their facility might be confusing. So they wanted to make sure that in order to cover Marathon, that dealership meant selling it out of your plant.
Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Not easily, I bet. I would, we're in work session, right? So I'd entertain a motion to.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendments to 2670.
Representative Donner. Moves the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2670. Is there any objection? Or is there any questions? Or is there any objection? Seeing none, adopt them.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2670 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Zahner moves House Bill 2670 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Brian, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carried.
Mr. Chair, I'd also move to put this on the consent calendar unless someone... Do you think there needs to be some discussion on the floor?
Seems like a pretty good issue.
I mean, I don't expect...
Forget it.
Anyone want to carry it?
Representative Greenleaf, would you like to carry it?
Oh, bingo.
We haven't carried it.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that'll teach you a lesson.
Keep it short. It's going to pass. No good deed goes unpunished.
There you go.
Yes, I'll try to help you.
Maybe you can answer your own question about how you can sell $1 billion more.
Yeah. I need a briefing, team.
How does it feel to be a winner?
I'm going to come to you. Sure. Okay. We still no Representative Krupp, and so I think that we will schedule the hearing later or further. Okay. Well, maybe we can go. Yeah, we can go ahead. We'll open the. A public hearing on House Bill 2954, and Kelly, would you like to make any comments, or? Jason, did you? Okay, all right. Yeah, okay. We'll close the public hearing then on 2954, and anything else for the committee, Janet?
Mr. Chair, we have two meetings on Wednesday, 8:30, I'm not sure, 8:30, and 2 o'clock. And we'll have to move rooms again in the afternoon.
3:43.
What we will, 3:43. What we will probably do, so have your staffs take note, we'll issue one agenda, but then recess it between at floor session until 2 o'clock. So it'll be one agenda, don't look for two agendas.
Oh, okay.
Do as much as we can, and then push the rest in the afternoon.
Yeah, we might finish it all.
Okay.
Good idea.
Anything else?
Then
nothing. We are adjourned.